This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey guys, it's a special New York City Beer Week episode. We are hanging out at The Gate in Brooklyn, one of the better beer bars and old school beer bars.
One of the first,
in Brooklyn.
Jimmy.
My good buddy Sean McCain is
curator
of beer, bro. Tell us about this night. We got
This was
original
arranged by,
OG.
By Pat Fondler. He happened to have an idea of bringing two amazing breweries from Troy, New York, down. Rare Form from Troy, and then Mike Schatzel's Thin Man from Buffalo. Then he wanted to bring in these different beer bar owners, like Dave over here from The Rock. And
what's going on, guys?
James from Bronx Ale House.
Nice to see you guys.
And it spiraled. Then they invited me, and then 3 hours ago I found out I was going to be your co-host.
You're awesome. And also we got...
Hello.
That's Kevin.
Kevin from Rare Form Brewing.
So we got, you know, this is a pretty cool show for me because so many of us have been together a long time, beer reps, bar owners, and done a lot of things in the craft beer community. You know, we were there before the New York City Beer Week. We were there doing Good Beer Seal Bar stuff. So we're just going to chat a little bit. I think we're going to start with Dave and Kevin from Troy because you're kind of the reason why the event was put together tonight. So why don't you, Dave, just give us a little backstory about you and The Ruck because that's another one of those great beer bars in New York State that you always heard about. And I've only been to Troy once, but I'm going there July 20th. For the farming man up in Altamont.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to seeing you in Troy when you get up there in July. The Ruck is a work in progress. It's been around for 21 years. It opened up its doors in January of 1998. Just a college bar / local hangout. And I worked there the day it opened, and I had the good fortune of working my way up the ladder. And in 2004, I was able to take over the reins and start pushing on some things to be progressive. And the first thing we recognized was beer selection. So craft beer was definitely our conduit to grow and sustain.
And it still is. I mean, you have always had the best selection in the capital region, as far as
Thank
I'm
you,
concerned.
Sean.
And The Ruck, talk to us about that. I mean, I know you're a huge rugby guy, right?
That I am.
So it was called The Ruck before you were involved with it?
Yeah, so the original owners of The Ruck were rugby teammates from Siena College over across the Hudson River in Loudonville, New York.
So you knew them?
Yes.
Right on.
My boss was my rugby coach at RPI when I attended Rensselaer back in the late 90s. So long story short, I didn't really move forward in my RPI career, but I did move forward in my Ruck career.
Yeah, you did, man. I'll tell you what, and we thank you for that.
And then this is a lot of smart guys in this industry. I always love the guys that, you know, RPI is what? Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. One
That's
of
correct,
the best
Jimmy.
Engineering schools in America. Right up there with MIT. So this guy was a brain. To me, it's like the Jack Kerouacs of the world. Always do well, you know. Jack Kerouac, who's from my neck of the woods, Lowell, Massachusetts. He was a football player. Smart guy, went to Columbia.
I love his haikus.
Yeah, man. So, but how did that influence you? I that's what I love about this. I think that's part of the show is the OG guys, and we should talk about our hidden talents. Maybe that's where the show goes. Because you're a rugby player, but you're a smart guy. And then what made you get into the bar business?
No different than playing football in high school and playing rugby in college. It was the team camaraderie piece, the stewardship piece. You know, that if you're good at what you do, that you help others rise along with you in your efforts. And it's kind of the foundation of leadership and stewardship. So with that being said, I've been able to allow myself the opportunities to grow and have a lot of great people to inspire me to grow. And as a result, I've been able to kind of pay it forward and help others just appreciate the biography of craft beer.
Unless that's no, I'm not done, Sean. You're my show. Come on, give it to Sean. No, Sean, you're an interesting guy too. So we're gonna try to shape the show. You had a different background. You've got some artistic and creative background.
Yeah, I started off.
What are your
a,
hidden? We were an actor. You had some
actor
interesting backgrounds.
You know, I believe like like what Dave's talking about. It's all about bringing people together and finding ways to rise people to their level of success. And for a long time, I wasn't doing that until I rebooted my life maybe 11 years ago. And then I decided I wanted to be a leader in the craft beer community. And I hope
we knew you most when you were selling beer for Victory, and then you were selling beer for Bronx Brewery.
The Greenport, and before that, Union Beer. But now I'm the curator of beer, and I'm just sort of looking at this new landscape where you see 7,000 breweries, most of them making amazing liquid. But how do you sustain life as a professional brewery?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, let's talk about, and then the other guys, James.
That's why we should talk to Kevin, I think, right there.
Okay, Kevin from Rareform. Tell us about your backstory and how you got into this.
Sure.
Because you have hidden talents, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Well, search for them. They might be really hidden. But I got into it when I was actually in high school. I went to visit my brothers in college. And he wanted me to go to see what a college course was like, and I picked a chemistry course. Went to it, and this is in Colorado. The professor came down, and he had his backpack and his coffee, and started talking about this process. We're going to be going through this process today. And he would take out his backpack. He would take like a book and put this, like, this book equals this, this coffee equals this, and he kind of worked his way down and would take stuff off the table and put it back on the table. At the very end, he took his backpack down and he pulled a beer out of the table and he put it on the table and said, "We just made beer today." And I was like, "Holy, what? Like, we can actually make beer? I don't have to find someone to buy it for me." So I was a junior in high school and started brewing that time, and that was in the 90s, and been kind of brewing since then. Fell in love with it right then. Started bartending at craft beer bars in Colorado, and then moved to Seattle. Lived in Seattle for years doing it, and then moved over here, and we opened up in 2014 in Troy.
Is one of your beers here today? Do we get a rare form?
Yeah, we have a Schwartz beer here that's brewed with smoked raisins, some rye, some caraway, and also Urfa Biber chili. So an Urfa Biber chili is a chili that brings out this fruit characteristic, enhances some of the raisin notes to it, but doesn't bring in any heat or anything along those lines.
I mean, there's a really nice complexity to this. I mean, everything that you just said, I don't taste, which is great, because that's all about the recipe and everything coming together.
Yeah, I think one of the things about it too, I think when you're having those flavors, and one of those things is, I don't like when you have a beer that's so overpowering that it just is one thing and that's it. It should reach out and extend through that and have a complexity to it that everything has nice subtleties to it.
One thing that's interesting, my buddy Ben Keen, the editor at Beer Advocate, he's out in Pacific Northwest tweeting about his favorite smoked beers. And a lot of people are talking about smoked beers. And Three's made a really good one recently, Short Fuse, which was like a smoked pale ale or something.
Yep. Yeah, I wonder, with this smoke, we wanted to stay away from actually smoked grain. And so the only thing that's smoked is the raisins on cherry wood.
Yeah. And James, let's just talk about smoked beers now. I mean, do you carry any smoked beers at the Bronx Alehouse?
Yeah, I mean, smoked beers have been kind of popular with maybe us beer geeks for a while. Those of us that know, like, the original smoked beers, like Schlenker or something. But they're really making a comeback in the bars with, you know, maybe more lightly smoked than Schlenker or using smoked ingredients like the guys at Rareform are using. But they're definitely kind of, you know, getting some traction again now.
Yeah, and then Dave, you know, so in Troy, I mean, pretty much is the beer scene the same as New York and the East Coast? I mean, in terms of, like, what people are ordering, are people ordering smoked beers?
What's really amazing about the Troy populace is that we're a very small city of 50,000 people, but the palate is incredibly eclectic. We really try to be as savvy with the styles of beer, and we try to represent as many styles of beer as possible. And now that it's wintertime, a lot more smoked beers and malt-forward beers and big decadent beers come out, and people really enjoy them this time of year.
Is it true? I mean, I know you brought a friend here. I can't say his name because he works for the state. But if you work for the state, don't you start getting out early at like 3 o'clock and start going drinking? Is that what you guys do? Don't you can't say anything on the air, but...
He's saying absolutely.
So your core of, in Troy, your core is all the state employees that get off early and drink.
State, county, local municipality. It's kind of our cheers. You know, you'll see a construction worker next to a lawyer, next to a state worker, and next to a professor from one of the universities. It's pretty diverse.
Yeah. And James, what's your crowd like up in the Bronx now?
Yeah, it is very much the same. I mean, we get I would say our biggest crowd of professionally are teachers. And as a former high school English teacher, I appreciate that crowd very much because I know how much they need a drink after work. In our local area.
Do you offer specials for teachers?
Yeah, we do, actually. Every Friday afternoon, all the teachers get 10% off everything. Until 7 p.m. every night. It starts at 11 a.m. should they get out that early. If they get out for lunch, they can have a beer, but I won't tell their parents, the parents of the school. That's our biggest single profession there. We're right next to Manhattan College where we are, so we have a lot of that crowd. So it's a really eclectic crowd of the neighborhood people, which is such a mix of the old Irish, the younger, mostly Latino population of the neighborhood, the college that's right next door, all of the people that visit Van Cortlandt Park. So, you know, it's a great eclectic mix. And something that, you know, when I first started out in craft beer, it wasn't a very mixed crowd, and bringing this scene up to the Bronx has been kind of really cool to see more and more people of all kinds get involved in craft beer.
That's great. And another great beer bar guy who's now also got a hand in a brewery, Patrick Doniger.
Hello, Jimmy.
And how are you, mate?
I'm doing good.
Let's talk. I want to think about the old days. You know, you were behind the Rattlin' Hum, which was a Good Beer Seal bar, and you've got quite a few really great beer bars right now.
I actually started at down in Brooklyn here.
Cherry Tree.
But that was the days. I used to drink an Old Blind Tiger, and I was bartending around the city, clubs and this and that and whatever. And I fell into the Tiger one time, and a few weeks later, I ended up here at the Gate, met Pat bartending. And now we're done a full circle, and look at this.
And what turned you on to craft beer?
Taste. Simply taste.
So you knew it back then? Because back then, the Irish bars didn't really serve craft beer, did they?
I didn't drink in Irish bars.
I
immigrated to America, Jimmy. I didn't need to go to another Irish bar. Been there, done that, grew up in one.
Don't let the accent fool you.
Right, now, Sean, give us your take on Patrick Doniger.
Oh,
because
hell no.
We're going to take a pass on this one, Jimmy. We're going to plead the fifth. On, as Sean's attorney, I would advise myself to get in the car and drive very fast.
Take on Patrick Doniger is he's a pioneer for the New York City craft beer scene. He was not only an early adopter, but he was a frickin' influencer. He made a lot of change. He made a lot of waves. And that's not a 20, is it? Because I only take 50s. And basically, I just admired him when the first time I met him, because he's got the Irish attitude of I own a bar, I'm going to make things happen. But his integrity was all about craft beer, community, pushing forward flavor, all of the good things that we are all brought here together that are in the craft beer community. Patrick, when did you leave New York City to really explore what was happening outside? Like, when did you meet Dave Gardell at The Rock? Did you go up there? Did you hear about him?
Yeah, I can't remember going up at all.
But
it was a while ago.
But where? Tell me an influence that was outside of New York City.
I guess when I was at Cherry Tree, my brother Joe came down, checked it out, loved it. He had a bar in Queens. He said, like, do you think you could do this in Manhattan? I was like, yep. When the wheels started turning then, I would head down. I started traveling. I would Dogfish Head, Scar City later on. I would go out to Stone. I traveled around a bit. And there was a few breweries that weren't even in New York yet. And I remember trying to convince them to come and do it like a tap takeover at Rattlin' Hum. And we had to make a splash. And we used to do 40 tower tap takeovers.
Who was your first?
Stone, actually.
No, all right.
We done Victory first, then we done Stone. Because I remember being at Stone and with myself, Johnny Lanigan, and Greg Cook, and we were talking. We were at his apartment. We were talking about this tour, Tap Tower takeover tour, and of New York. And we were like trying to push to get it at Rattlin' Hum right away. And then all of a sudden, 6 months later, it blew up. And I think he done it all across the country. So, and then Sierra Nevada, all the big guys. And back then, it was crazy. Like, it was insane to get 40 beers from Sierra Nevada.
Sean, you're onto something. These are great questions because, Pat, you really did make a splash with Rattlin' Hum. And I don't know if anybody in this room wants to give credit, to what Pat Doniger's done.
No.
Sorry. I'll be the first one to throw bouquets. Being in Troy, New York, and being in the Capital Region, long story short, guys like him and David Broderick and Mike Schatzel, the people that I looked up to and, you know, wanted to be in the same sentence or the same room with these guys back in the day. And, you know, here we are right now. So what a treat.
We just went around like begging. It was like, we love your beer. Can we bring your beer to New York City? You know, it was like, it was fun back then. Like Dave Broderick, for one thing, legend in my eyes. I wanted to do what he was doing at the Tiger back then. And I was, you know, it was really hard because nobody wanted to spend $5-6 on a beer, you know? And now you look at it, it's like, you know, you're buying $260 kegs of Blink of an Eye. It's like, this is crazy how it grew so much. But sixties. But now you see, like, Dave Broderick to me was, I looked up to him and Ray Dieter and yourself. And it was like, these are the guys that, you know, were leading the path and they were onto something. And I was just, I remember just coming into the bar and like trying this beer. And then trying this beer, we're like, holy shit, I was drinking shit for the last 10 years. But, you know, it was like, and it just got my attention.
You were
a quick
learner,
Pat,
and you picked up on things, even like, especially imports and Shelton Brothers stuff. And I felt like once you opened Jeffrey and Fool's Gold, it was almost like you could corner the market. Somehow you had everyone. You got to get it to pack
it
first.
I got something up. Something popped up on Facebook the other day with a memories thing. We had like 6 Cantillons on tap at Rattling Home. Nobody came out for it. Me, Mary Isaac, Chris Guzme, drank all of them. We were bringing growlers home. We were like trying to get these cultures because Kuzma taught me how to brew, and it's like we were trying to do different things with this beer because we couldn't let it go to waste, and nobody understood the importance of this beer. 2 years later, you know, it was Wednesday day and people are lining up around the block. I was like, man, I just wasted a lot of beer.
Let's talk about some things. Like, I was the same thing. We got our first keg of Cantillon Goose. I remember it sitting set for 3 weeks and no one would buy it. And that was about 2006. And then a few years later, I couldn't even get one. And if I got one, it would sell in like 2 hours.
Yeah, I remember. Even now, I'm still like, I used to joke with BR and Bob. I was like, oh, remember the days I used to get the pick of whatever I wanted because nobody else knew what it was? And I was like, so I'm glad. But the Shannon brothers, don't forget, they still make sure I get one. Because when you were there from the very beginning and you always take it, I never go hunting it. It was like, They know to put one down for us, and they know it has to spread around. And I was just over in Belgium. Well, I don't know what time it was. I go over every year, but Sean took me around and showed me his new expansion. I'm like, more Cantillon for New York. I'll take that one. But it's you know, it's people are stepping up to the demand, and it's getting the word spread, which is phenomenal. It's like this time, 15 years ago. You know, the bars were empty. We were trying to get people in to drink this beer, and now it's just crazy good, and we're still a very small share of the market space in New York City. You know, it's like now with my own brand, Alewife, we're still being challenged going into these bars trying to sell on craft beer and still trying to get them to take a local product, you know, without kind of stealing other people's taps, but taking the big guys' taps. You know, it's like, we don't mess around.
Jump ahead, you know, Pat, because you got your hands in everything. What are some of the new, since we all can't get Cantillon when we want it, I feel like you got to focus on the new small breweries.
There's
so what are
so
some that you really go crazy for, and including the guys that are in this room?
Example, last year I went to the BXL Beer Fest in Brussels, and I've gone 2 years now, and it's been just amazing. And these small young brewers are just taking a shot, and they're like from Rome and Italy, there's so many great, I can't remember any of the names, of course, but there's going to be a lot of good beer coming over here very soon. Like you follow, like the Shelton Brothers are some of the best tastes in the planet, and they do just bring in the best beer. So I would just keep a sharp eye on those guys and see what they're bringing in. But if you want to talk American, like where do you go? You go any town, there's going to be some magic coming out of that town. Like I have my eye on a few, and I'm waiting for them to come to New York. And you know, there's so many bars, like you go to As Is or anything like that in the West Side, or Haymaker and French bars like this, they know, they do what they done what I used to do by going to these. Like I used to go up to Hill Farmstead and meet Dave Roderick up there, and he told me to go up there one time, and went up, met Sean, and started tasting beer, and we were bootlegging his beers back to New York before they came to New York. And it was like, they were the small brewery back then. There's always small breweries to go and pick, and they have such good integrity. They're not interested in growing fast. They just want to, you know, they want to please their admirers. You know, they want to try to get their beers in into different markets slowly. But
Great. And Sean, you just poured us a beer. Well, first, let's recap. So we had the Rare Form. What was that? A smoked beer?
We had the, it was a Raison.
Schwarzbier.
Schwarzbier. From Bamberg influenced to black lager. Then we had this Thin Man, which we didn't talk about at all. This delicious. Tart ale, sour ale.
Yeah,
but
delicious.
Now Patrick came in and just blasted my mind with Alien Technology, which is a 10% stout. I don't know anything more about it other than I want it all the time, except not tonight. Because
I would not guess that
night
was 10%, though.
That tastes so easy.
It's a good beer
so
at the end of the night because it steadies
them. Yeah, it is. So
we've got Alewife, and we've got, and I think if you look at our posts, Aaliyah will have the actual beers that we're drinking.
In rare form.
So let's talk to Kevin for a minute. So Kevin, you know, you're brewing in Troy. You know, some of the influences we've been talking about, things that Pat said. Give us your take on things, you know, and you can ask and talk with Dave Gardell here too. So,
sure. You know, for us it was interesting because I came from growing up in Colorado and working at craft beer bars there that, you know, when we would have Tuesdays and Thursdays at the beer bar I used to work at, you know, we'd have 40 beers online. The majority of it was all Colorado beer, and this is late 1990s. On Tuesday and Thursday, you would be able to get $2 liters of any Colorado beer. It was crazy. From that, and then moving to Seattle, and then coming over here from Seattle, we actually didn't think that we were going to open our brewery in Seattle. We came over here for my wife's grad school, and then we're going to be heading back to Seattle. We thought we'd open the brewery out there, and then kind of fell in love with the East Coast and decided to do it in Troy. So when we came into it, one, we didn't know anybody in this area, but we were also coming from a different perspective of what the beer culture was in the on the West Coast and Seattle area, Portland area, and then also from Colorado. So it was kind of a little bit a shake up and a wake up call in a way of just being like, we have these other ideas.
What years were you in Seattle and Portland during that time? Because that's a very pivotal time.
For us, when we left there in 2009, moved there in 2004, 2003, left there in 2009 to come out here. So when we were there, there was only a handful of breweries. I knew everyone that was there at the time. They were starting to do, that's actually when they were starting to put in little storage units. They're opening storage units, and the storage unit people were shutting them down, and everyone had to find spaces at the same time. So it was kind of crazy at the moment. And that's when we left. It was interesting to come from there and that approach and that, and then coming in and trying to absorb as much of the East Coast as we could.
Yeah, and then Dave, you know, you're up there in Troy, you're buying beer, you're interacting with a lot of brewers and stuff. Between Patrick and Kevin, why don't you ask a couple questions of these guys? You know, what's going on for them as brewers, or let's say you're buying their beer, you want to ask a question. Let's get a real beer bar question. When you're a beer bar guy, you've got all these people coming to you now. It used to be the new beer of the week, and now it's like there's thousands of breweries. Well, how do you deal with it?
Back then it was all about the story, and I still feel that's very relevant, and I think it's very necessary. I think it's mission critical for craft beer to continue to sustain and grow, is that we're in a high handshake, high five environment, high volume environment, and you know, without the connection to the owner of the brewery, the brewmaster, the sales rep, one of the many things that made the Ruck successful was the relationships we had with our brewery reps. Sean McCain was one of the first ones at Victory and Bronx, Greenport Harbor. As he changed his hats,
all of my tin taggers are still up at the Ruck. Just saying that.
That's a fact.
And your tap handles, by the way.
And your tap handles as well on the ceiling. But long story short, it was the connection. So like if Pat had his brewery 10, 12 years ago, I'd ask him about himself, his life story, you know, why craft beer? Why did he put his name in the hat? Why is he so passionate about it? Talk about the beers, you know, rhyme and reason. Tell me about the styles. You know, what was the inspiration behind it? And then we would literally just
give it to Pat. Pat.
And pass it along.
He just asked a question. Dude, what's your passion, man? Now you're a brewer. This is your passion.
You know, here are a head brewer, and I, like, you know, we just talk about what recipes we want to do, what kind of beers we want to do. We look at the market. Honestly, we don't really care about the market that much. We want to make beers that we want to drink. We don't like this Imperial Stout we've done. haven't had a Russian Imperial Stout in a long time, and we want to do back to the basics kind of thing, base recipe, and then build on it. We done it with our IPA when we come out. We went malt heavy on a lot of things, and then we said, like, you know, we just wanted to aim for balance, and you know what the market now just wants.
Well, I'll say, guys, this the end of beer week, you're getting cut off. The end of beer week, it's kind of nice to have a Russian Imperial Stout, isn't it? It kind of cuts through.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say one thing as a, you know, a buyer owning a bar and buying the beers there, one thing the market is very saturated with now is the hazy IPA that everybody loves, including myself, but everybody's making. So sometimes a brewery that differentiates itself by doing something different, making a new Imperial Stout that is a little out of the box, and the box is Northeast IPA, New England IPA, whatever you want to call it, is really refreshing. So a Schwartz beer and an Imperial Stout really kind of like hits the mark right now, you know?
I always felt that way. Like, you know, for you guys, especially when you're in the business, it's like, you know, you get a long night, you might start with the pills, you go to an IPA. I always love these other styles. I love going with a Belgian triple, and I would drink a Russian Imperial Stout at the end of the night. But you always need, I feel like you need the full range of beers. I don't know if anyone wants to join in on, you know, the progression of beers is kind of important. I think beer is a culture like wine, and I'm sure that you guys have a sense of progression. You know, listen,
yeah, I'll take that one.
Go for it.
If you want to start the night off right, you need something that's going to be a party starter. Apparently that Imperial Stout was a little higher in alcohol than I thought. But what you were just saying about a Belgian triple, like, I want a Belgian triple at the beginning of the night. At the end of the night, that is a night ruiner, right? Because it's 9 to 11% alcohol. It's got all that candied sugar that's just going right through me. So
we got Bobby. Bobby's coming up.
Bobby Gannon from the gate.
Chaotica today.
Patrick Vendulier, you know I call you the French Canadian New England. But why don't you introduce the owner of the gate for us?
This was like, most people probably know who I am. I worked here for a very long time, 12 years actually. And Bobby's one of my very best friends, and he's the proprietor of this fine establishment. And we're going to bring him in and talk to him about the place. I love this place.
Thank you. And you know, Bobby, we did in the show here a couple years ago with the owners of Green Flash.
That's right.
And we didn't get to you for that one, so I'm feeling lucky.
I think I was out of town.
You always host the best things, and I saw your draft list.
We got a nice little booth here. I've never seen this many people in this room.
I saw your draft list, and I'm always really impressed with this place. I mean, James here from Bronx Ale House, we were saying just how great, you know, this is it's a prototype beer bar, right, guys? It's like perfect. It's like the bar is nice. There's little nooks to go sit in. There's an outdoor space. But today online, I saw your beer list, and I was like, wow, this is really why we have like a good beer seal and why we care about, you know, this part of the industry, because you're doing it, man. You're doing it right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I mean, for this place, it was always the, 1996, we took the spot, and it was crazy. Beer focus. 24 draft lines, you know, in what was then considered to be, you know, experimental Parks, the and edge of Park Slope. And we haven't looked back.
Great. Why don't you guys, let's let the guys sit in here ask Bobby some questions. Because I know, James, you've had the Bronx Ale House for a while. And you know each other.
Yeah, well, we've been at the Bronx Ale House only 10 years, which pales in comparison to the gate. But the gate is one of the reasons why the Bronx Ale House and probably many other, you know, craft beer-focused bars in the city exist. Because guys like me came to the gate. So I guess the question I would have was, what made you think in 1996 that this was going to work?
Faith, I guess. Faith. For me, it was, I worked with Dave Broderick down in Tribeca. He opened up the Blind Tiger. I worked at the Blind Tiger. And then and I met Brian Delaney in those days too. And we all just started talking about
Spring Lounge.
The Spring Lounge. And our unified enthusiasm for beer got us talking, and, you know, spaces came up, and this one came up, and I had never really thought about anything but Manhattan. Came out here and looked at the space, and I walked through the door, and something said yes. It took a couple years. So in the beginning, I remember Sam Calagione coming up for one of his first beer events, and we sat in the corner with about five people in the bar and thought, is this going to work?
It did.
It was 1997 or 8.
That's... We're a few years behind, and it took a little longer to grow to the Bronx, but that's really kind of the story we had is, I managed a place called George Keeley's, which is now 17 years old on the Upper West Side, and we said, let's do this in the Bronx, and... We had a little bit of the same growing pains because, our local clientele there kind of still needed to be educated a little bit, or not even educated, but just get used to what we were serving and realize that this is really great stuff. And
You remind me of, the first couple of years here with, 10 years later-ish, where we were putting beer in people's hands, and talking to them about it. And quickly realizing that the smaller core of regulars that we had at that time were here a lot. I mean, they came out, now what do you got on? Now what do you got for me? I really like that last, and that was really where it started to generate. And you get you build that enthusiasm across the counter, and look where we are now.
Bobby, I came in here tonight at the gate, and you have a couple customers here tonight that were here when you first opened.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's something special. Yeah, I mean, James, do you remarkable. Aspire to that you have this? You'll have the same regulars after 20 years that you did when you started.
Yeah, and we do. Like we're just about to hit our 10th anniversary, and we do have the same customers that were with us day one. Some of them were the so-called craft beer geeks, and some of them are those people that just saw a nice looking bar and wanted to come in, and we kind of handed them a beer that we said, "Oh, you're drinking this? Well, drink this instead." And they really took to it, and it's taken off. And now we've hosted some of their weddings and funerals, a little everything. But we've really built a community, and that's what all of us are here in this tiny little dart room about, is the communities we've built between the brewers and the bar owners and the distributors with this craft beer thing over 20 years or so now.
So Bobby, you said we're up in this little
real quick. I think that when you say the word community, that really is where it this was always intended to be a local neighborhood establishment, and then the craft beer community met the actual community, and it's burgeoning, that enthusiasm, and it's what we do in this business. We're in the service industry. We're about the people around us, the people who walk through the door.
Well, Bobby, it's like you've really stepped up the game, and I still love the beer bar guys, and I know we're all talking about breweries and stuff, but to me it's always like the good beer bar is a temple of beer. It's kind of like a good restaurant or a good place. You're ultimately about serving the customer, and you're evolving. You're evolving with tastes, but you're also the taste makers too.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything like the list you have today? Let's just go through the list. Huh. What are some of the beers that you like on this list today? Because it's fun to talk about it, and it's pretty great list, isn't it, James?
A lot of the list is I have not tried yet. I mean, this is a lot of the stuff is first time here. I mean, the brewery we know. The breweries we know, but the beers themselves, I'll let you know in a couple hours.
Well, you had Rare Form, we had Thin Man, you got Alewife.
Yep, and we always try to run the spectrum. That's kind of what we all do, is you try to keep everything out there.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Diane Stemple.
And I'm Elena Santigade, and we're the hosts of Cutting the Curd here on Heritage Radio Network. Featuring interviews with makers and mongers and everybody in between, this show is a downright funky look at the world of artisan cheese.
You can find Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
We've got another guest here. Who is this and what's your name?
This is Alan Rice from City Swiggers Beer Shop.
So again, another place, a good beer seal place, some of the best selection in the city. You know, we've been talking a little bit about Beer Week and, you know, the old OG beer bars and stuff. Give us your take on it, because you've been there since the beginning. Tell us how you got started. Did you have some hidden talent that brought you to the business? I think that's what we're on right now.
My hidden talent was hanging out of places like the Gates and the Blind Tiger and DBA. I am meeting a lot of people back then. And when I got tired of a regular job, my hobby was beer, so I opened a beer shop. We ended up on East 86th Street because there was nothing there.
Well, tell me, so when City Swiggers opened, I mean, again, was it a leap of faith for you, or you kind of knew that, oh, that neighborhood really needed something, what you were doing?
Both.
Yeah.
But we looked all around, and it just turned out to be the spot, and I'm glad we ended up there.
So in the room tonight, this is going to be a great party here. I mean, just mention some of the guys and establishments that are here that you know.
Well, I just walked in and got thrown right over here, so I got to warm up a little bit.
Sean McCain's going to say something here.
I know both
you'll get
Patrick's,
warmed up.
First of all,
Alan Rice, I met Alan Rice. You were a Blind Tiger regular for a very long time, and then you made the decision with you and your wife to open up City Swiggers. It was a big change for you. It was not. What did you do before you did City Swiggers?
I did... I was day trading stocks. Before that, I was doing rules and regulations for Wall Street type places.
Right. So when I met you, I was working for Victory, and you were just wanting to drink beer and talk about, we were hanging out, you know, we were just talking about beer, enjoying it. And then you made a decision, a very big one, to up the game and bring to the upper east side a really great craft beer takeaway place, which wasn't done before because it was the blended license, right? So you could drink there and you could also take it away. Nobody was doing that. You were the first.
The first,
other than Earl's.
Well, the first up there, but yeah, I got to give credit to Beer Craft that was just a few blocks away from here. And also a shout out to Ray from DBA. He was someone I was talking to just before we opened. Unfortunately, that's about when he passed.
Well, wow. Let's get these last guys in. So the new guys, you guys introduce yourselves, say where you're from, and so happy that you guys are here.
I am Mariana Roof. I work at Covenhoven in Prospect Heights. We've only been open for about 4 years now, but still paying homage to the OG craft community. And here's this one over here.
I'm Adam from Finback Brewery. Stopping by the party.
Nice.
It's a great scene going on over here. It's been a fun week already. So you know, just
so Finback, you guys, now you're one of your owners, Basil, is the president of the New York City Brewers Guild.
That is correct.
How was the opening bash?
Opening bash was amazing this year. A lot of great breweries, a lot of great beer. We had a great turnout, and it's just getting better every year.
So let's give a shout out to the Gate. We're gonna wrap up soon, but give a shout out. You guys came. This is a great party. Let's just sum it up. What, you know, you got invited. What are some of the other brewers and bar owners here that you'd like to say hi to?
I literally just showed up, so I don't even know everybody that's here. But
everyone's leaving.
But pretty much everybody in this New York community that's brewing great beer is doing a great job. Transmitter, KCBC, Folks Beer, Other Half, everybody. They're all doing great.
See, that's a loyal New York City craft beer member right there. I love it.
And then Alan. Now Alan's getting jazzed up. So Alan Rice, this is the interview I wanted for like 5 years. Alan Rice, City Swiggers, one of the top beer shops in the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Well, we are a Finback bar. They're almost always on tap, and we grab the cans whenever we can. So, and one person I do want to give a shout out to is Dave Rodriguez, who is now with Five Boroughs. But when I first started, he was my Union Beer area rep, my route rep, and he helped convince me to go to the Upper East Side because he didn't want to have to go downtown to get samples.
No, that's great. But guys, since we have Finn back here, I'm interested how you guys kind of rolled out the can program, because just a few years ago it was new for you know, local breweries.
Yeah.
But your can program's like pretty solid, isn't it?
We have some excellent can beers. In terms of rolling out the can program, I mean, we started off using Ironheart, and quickly realized that it was in our best interest to get our own canning line. So we, about 2 years ago, purchased our own Wild Goose canning line, and it's just been rolling ever since. I mean, we crank cans. I mean, we're packaging 2-3 new beers every week in cans and kegs.
Now let's talk about the impact of cans. I mean, this is like a whole nother show, and we've done a lot of these. But the change from draft and bottles to cans, changed the whole industry.
Cans is, I mean, 16-ounce cans is the standard. It's everything now, and it's your marketing half the time. I mean, your brand recognition is the cans.
Great, Alan. I want you to talk about, because you got a bottle shop, and
the best thing about the cans was it killed the bomber. I always hated the pricing on bombers and
22-ounce bottles.
Yeah, 22-ounce bottles are great if you don't break up your six packs, but we always did. So, and now you look at them and it's like, okay, here's an IPA that's 4 weeks old from the West Coast. I don't want it because it's in a bomber.
Which is not the right container for a 22-ounce. So that's the one thing that cans really changed, was the availability of fresh beer delivered in the correct container. Now, however, we have been receiving currently and are drinking a bottle that is in a, I don't know, what's 330 milliliter bottle?
Tequila barrel aged.
So this is a Finback
variant. Yes, this is our BQE.
First of all, tequila, Sean, this is an awesome beer. This is an awesome beer.
So we've done the BQE almost since our inception. It's one of our most popular beers. It sells out. There's lines at the brewery for it. But we usually do variations on it, a few different ones. Finally, this year, so we did our normal three variations, which were this year a chestnut, the standard, and the salty caramel. But we were also able to finally source some tequila and mezcal barrels, which are tricky to get for more than one reason, cost and sourcing. But we finally got two of each, and we put our BQE in mezcal barrels and tequila barrels, aged them out for close to a year, and got some delicious, delicious beer out of it.
Let's talk about Covenhoven. You guys came on the map, and you had made a really great... I mean, basically, all the beer writers in New York City for a while, Josh Bernstein, Justin Kennedy, all live within walking distance of Covenhoven. So you got on the map fast, but you got a great little spot.
So, yeah, we are going to turn 5 at the end of March, actually, and just saw Josh today. He's been covering some new stories, and he's also, like, you know, burnt out. Like, it's beer week. It's everyone's anniversaries. It's about to be everyone's anniversaries. There's too many beers. I'm losing my mind. My daughter's 5. What's going on? So...
You, as from Finback, what do you love about shops like Covenhoven?
Covenhoven specifically has an incredible vibe. It's like being home when you're there. The way the music is curated, the way that the place is set up, the beer selection is absolutely incredible, and they get better beer than a lot of other places. Like, the buyers in places like Covenhoven, in places like City Swiggers, they know their beer. They know where they need to get their beer from.
So years ago, all these old school guys, Dave Broderick, Ray Dieter, got together and we made up the Good Beer Seal. And this is exactly what it was about. So keep going, Covenhoven.
So I actually has been going as a customer for about 3.5 years before I started working there. And the wonderful thing I loved about it, I grew up in service. My family owned bars and restaurants. I have never felt such a wonderful sense of community and joy than I have at Covenhoven. I have always felt accepted. It has been so much fun. I have always had a good time. If I've had a bad day at work, working like 14-hour bar shifts, I'll go by for a beer and just... It's like, it's just the neighborhood living room, honestly. And the beer menu is... It's curated. They care. They will tell you honestly, like, okay, like, this beer got ordered at this time. It's been sitting on the shelf, but it's still good. Or like, we're really excited. This beer is going to have a tap takeover in a week. You should come by. And it just feels like when you come back for a family party. It just feels like you're seeing all your friends. You're seeing your family. You're seeing your favorite cousins all over again.
You're on our list, man. I tell you this, and like, Alan's here, too.
I do love it. And
yeah.
It is one of the places that I grew up, like, in and out of bars and restaurants. It is one of the only places I've worked at where I can go and hang out on my day off and not feel stressed out.
We love breweries and we love that they have tasting rooms, but I still love the Good Beer Seal bars. Alan, yeah. Tell us something that's unique about your place that's different than going to a brewery tap room.
Well, all the breweries are at our place. We always have the local.
So you're the ultimate tasting room.
Yeah, because you can crack a can too, like you can at Covenhoven. Of course, you can go out in their backyard. We're not allowed to use ours. So. That's.
But you're just like you're only saying negative things about your place.
No. Come on. So the cans have been amazing. The local breweries. We've had to add an extra shelving unit and a whole nother cooler. They each hold about 25 cases of beer when they're packed. All local cans, or in the region, and mostly IPAs. It's made a huge difference in our business and the number of people who are into beer and new. They don't even know what a West Coast IPA is. They love the new style of IPA, and the local breweries are giving it to them.
That's great, man. It's a nice balance, you know. We got great places like Covenhoven and City Swiggers to buy the beer, and other great breweries like Finback. Last thing, just one more time from Finback. Just again, what's the strong beer that we're drinking?
This is the tequila barrel aged BQE.
So we're drinking that. We had what was the imperial stout that we just had before?
You mean from Alewife? We had the Alien Technology.
Yeah, so it's as beer ends, like kind of like a progression on a good night. If you're having a good dinner or a night out, at some point we have to go to imperial styles and stronger beers, also for our palates, right?
I mean, at some point in the night, it's good to have a small pour of some imperial stout.
All right, Sean McCain, you're going to wrap it up. Come on.
Well, so this is specifically for Basil and Kevin, because I did a judgment at, it was either Union Hall or the Bell House for a the Brooklyn Home Brewers thingy, where I still have a fez that I proudly don't wear all the time. But when I do proudly wear it. And they won. Kevin and Basil won for, I believe it was a Saison. It was a farmhouse style. And then it's when I first
saw
them.
Great. They start out as great home brewers, and they became brewers.
But they've always been advocates within the New York City community. And the fact that Basil's now the president of the guild, and you guys are just doing so great, makes me so happy. So, pleasure to meet you. You know, and that's what New York City Beer Week's all about.
And then this has been a wild live show at the Gate in Brooklyn. This is New York City Beer Week 2019. Aaliyah's our new intern today helping us out. A big shout out to Sean McCain, our co-host.
Curator of beer.com.
Pat Fondler of Alewife.
It's Pat Fondler.
Bobby Gagnon of The Gate for hosting us. And you guys, one more time, whoever's left in the room, say your name one more time.
Adam Fletcher from Finback.
Mariana Roof Torres, Covenhoven.
Alan Rice from City Swiggers.
Guys, thanks for joining us here on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a crazy long live show. It might be edited, it might not, but tune in and you'll be listening to this in 2019. All right, rock on. See you. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.